broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman and Kirk Crosby live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use, no doubt, starts now. This, my fellow Americans, is the broadcast for April the 15th in the year of our Lord, 2019. This is our one of two, and our goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio in the traditions of our founding fathers. Yes, indeed, we use the blueprint for liberty, the supreme law of the land, the Constitution for the United States of America as our guide. And absolutely, we're convinced the checks and balances brilliantly put in place by the founding fathers, one of the great peaceful, restorative solutions we have at our fingertips. As you know, we reject revolution. We stand for peaceful restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth. Welcome to Liberty Roundtable Live. Normally, ladies and gentlemen, we do a recap of the previous broadcast. We are live 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday. And we always talk about news the networks refuse to use, Liberty Roundtable Live. Week in review. We did that first hour on Saturday. Second hour, though, I'll wait. We'll get to that in a minute. It is a special or a sad day, if you will. It's tax day. Some say it's freedom from taxes day, but man, it's sure far into the year for my taste. Nevertheless, we have an interesting guest for tax day, Jonathan Williams. Who is he? He's chief economist and vice president for ALEC. We'll talk about ALEC in just a second. But he's also the lead author of an annual report, Rich States, Poor States. Yeah, believe it or not, the 12th edition is out today. Yeah, Americans are continuing their march to low-tax states, as a column Jonathan Williams just wrote as well. So let's get a glimpse. Jonathan, welcome back to Liberty Roundtable Live, sir.
Well, thank you, and happy tax day if there is such a thing.
Well, it is happy tax day in the sense that, hey, you get past it and you feel better for the rest of the year. That's the only good news, right?
That's right, exactly. Well, at least there is some good news out there, at least what's happening in the states. And so that's kind of the fun piece of our new rankings that are out brand new this morning in the 12th edition.
All right, before we get to the 12th edition, let's just be very clear. Most people in America did get a tax break of some sorts, not enough, but they did get one, even if they got back less money. That's kind of a deception the media is using against us, because if you got back less money, you feel like you got less, but the truth is they took less from you. Didn't most people get a tax break?
You know, that is absolutely right. There's only about 5% of Americans that are going to pay more under the Federal Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, regardless of what the liberal media would have you believe. A full 80% of Americans will pay substantially less, and those in between means that they're not going to pay $100 more or $100 less. But overall, it's going to be a big tax cut for the average American. And you're right, this whole myth about tax size of tax refunds determining how successful the tax reform is complete balderdash being foisted on us by, you know, those who want us to be ignorant about how tax policy works. I mean, it's just remarkable to me that people say, oh, well, you have a less of a tax refund, so therefore somehow this is a problem that you've been giving government less of an interest-free loan throughout the course of the year. I'd rather take that money in my paycheck every period. I don't know about you.
And that's the part to understand, ladies and gentlemen. More money in your pocket, less money in the government's pocket. If you get back less, but you really got a tax cut, what it really means is you gave the government less money all year long, and therefore there's less to get back. But overall, you paid less, and you got to see the truth as it really is, ladies and gentlemen. That's what's called reality. All right, let's talk about not only did individuals get a benefit, and hopefully it'll continue even more so going forward. Rand Paul wisely pointed out, hey, we got this done. It's not enough, but we're, you know, the next step is to do more. And I pray they get that done. But it also has really made a difference in each state as well, right?
Well, it absolutely has. And it's been a game changer at the state level. And it's not for something, it's really a headline that's kind of flown below the radar for most of the mainstream media. And that is, just like Ronald Reagan cut taxes in the 1980s, the states saw a huge benefit from it because of the way that states linked their tax codes to the federal tax code. And without going into the weeds too much, what it means is states had a bunch of extra revenue that they had as a result of the Federal Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. And what that has meant is a whole new round of tax cuts at the state level, reducing rates and states really going forward to become more competitive, because this is ongoing and unexpected revenue that came from federal tax reform to state treasuries. And the dirty little secret, of course, is the states that wanted to pocket that and not give it back to taxpayers. But at the end of the day, we have this great system of federalism where we have these laboratories of democracy, and may the best state win. And certainly the states that have a freedom agenda are using this golden opportunity of federal tax reform and making themselves more competitive at the same time.
And that's why it's important to highlight that Americans are fleeing the tax abusive states to more tax freedom states every day. We'll get into that article in just a second. But I want to talk a little bit about the methodology you guys use for this, too. You have, what is it, 15 components?
That's right. 15 different factors that we've used over the 12 years that measure things like taxes and regulation and labor policy. And we really chose those 15 factors. Well, you could have probably 1,000 different ways of measuring the states. We chose them for a couple of reasons. As we know that they're all 15 of them matter for economic growth. They're things that my co-author Art Laffer has studied for 50 plus years that we know based on the evidence matter. And then secondly, and perhaps just as importantly, is there factors that state legislators in Salt Lake City and other state capitals directly control? Because there's so many of these different ways to measure states, but some of them look at factors that state legislators wish they had control over, but they clearly do not. Things like weather and quality of life and other things that are very difficult to measure. Ours are very tangible things that really state legislators have tremendous amount of control to be able to influence their future.
And, Jonathan, I'm waiting for the first state that can get rid of both unconstitutional taxes, property tax and income tax. I'm waiting for the first state to get rid of both of those. They could do it with apportionment taxes and sales taxes and many other taxes that would be a whole lot less invasive to your personal life and a whole lot more constitutional.
Right. I mean, states are moving in that direction all the time. I think, you know, property taxes are a challenge because they're local levels of government many times that are the big culprits. And unless you control the local levels of government spending somehow, this is really tricky. I mean, I'm a fan of what Utah does with the Truth in Taxation law that was, of course, on the books since the 1980s, and enforcing local public officials to take recorded votes when they try to raise your property taxes, either through rates or assessment process. I think that's been quite successful, at least keeping property taxes in check, where other states have been surging ahead with property tax burdens. But the other big trend that we see across the states every year is just how much states focus on reducing the other tax that you mentioned, and that is taxes on personal income, which we think are some of the most damaging forms of taxes in existence for states to raise revenue. And by the way, we have a natural experiment where we have 9 states in America that have 0 personal income taxes on wages. And that's actually one of the always our key findings in the report, is just how much of a growth premium there is associated with being a state that's a no income tax state. The proof is really in the pudding when you look at the data.
Because when you literally tax somebody's income, you choke the very prosperity side of the equation. Is that really the bottom line from your research?
Well, as my co-author Art Laffer always likes to say, this isn't rocket surgery. This is economics 101, is when you put a price on something and you tax something, you get less of it. And what an income tax is the putting a price on work, savings, investment, things that people ought to be doing. And we're just taxing them away from doing those things in many cases. And we're giving them all the incentive not to work, not to save, and not to invest. And then we are so surprised as a society when less people work and more people stay on government benefits, and we have a horrible savings rate in the United States. And all the meanwhile, our tax code is all heavily penalizing those activities.
I find that comical. They talk about a minimum wage and how we got to make it higher and higher and higher and higher. My co-host always jokes and says if we make it $100 an hour, everybody will be doing fine. It's a joke because we know that doesn't work. But if you were to reduce the income tax on everybody, they would instantly have a higher minimum wage without the government tampering with it at all. They'd be getting out of the way, sir.
That's exactly right. And also when you cut taxes on job creators, those evil rich people that you hear about in the liberal media, when you tax them less, they also pass it along to workers in the form of higher wages and better kinds of benefits. So I think it's one of these really conflictive visions, if you will, in terms of how we go about operating our government and setting up our taxing and spending structure. And it's really clear of the states in America that follow the limited government, lower tax approach versus the states with a high tax, high spend approach. It's very clear who's winning these days when it comes to competition for human capital and investment capital across states, as we track very closely every year. If you had to summarize our research in a dozen years now in about 10 seconds, it would be more like Texas and Florida and Utah and less like states like California and New York and Illinois.
Let's talk about that. You know, Rush Limbaugh, there's been a lot of people that have left, Glenn Beck, others who have left the state of New York, flat out highlighting, you know what, it's just too crazy expensive. So Glenn went to Texas, Rush went to Florida. You know, it's obvious when you see their example and their reality check. Most folks think it's because they're rich, but it's true for everybody. And intuitively, people get it, don't they?
Well, Redding, what do Florida and Texas have in common? Both of those states are no personal income tax states of the nine that I just mentioned. And so they had a situation where those individuals, or individuals, let's say, from California that have America's highest income tax rate at 13.3%, and you compare that with zero, it's a pretty easy raise that you give yourself by just changing your domicile and leaving and going to one of those states with lower tax burdens. And really, the key to their success in those no income tax states is they also spend less, and so they're more frugal with tax.
All right, hold on, Jonathan. I got a quick break to take. It's a hard break. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking to Jonathan Williams, chief economist and vice president for ALEC. We'll talk about ALEC in a second, but they got their annual report, Rich States, Poor States. It is tax day. It comes out the day. You can learn where it's better for you and I to live, less burdensome, less regulation on the government side of the equation, more money in your pocket. Hang tight, folks.
Hey, listen up. This is a deep state alert. Former Texas Congressman Steve Stockman, who moved to arrest Lois Lerner for contempt of Congress, has been imprisoned by the very office that Lerner led. You heard right. Stockman hit the Obama administration hard, and they hit back with the full force of the federal government. The guy who said he wanted Mark Levin as Speaker of the House was the first to threaten Obama's impeachment, exposed Hillary selling steel to the Iranians, and blocked both Obama's immigration and gun bills from even reaching the House. But Obama holdovers came after him in federal court with trumped up charges and have locked our guy up. Like many others, he was on Obama's hit list. Steve fought for us in Congress. Now we need to fight for him. Don't abandon this wounded hero on the battlefield. Let's help cover his massive legal costs. To chip in $5 or more, text the word fight to 444-999. That's fight, F-I-G-H-T, to 444-999, or go to defendapatriot.com. That's defendapatriot.com.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, hard-hitting talk radio at your fingertips. This is the one and only Liberty Roundtable Live. Our guest riding shotgun today, Jonathan Williams, chief economist and vice president of ALEC. Yeah, the 12th annual edition is out today. What am I talking about? Rich states, poor states, breaking down what's going on in the states with taxation and more. Hey, Utah has a property tax and an income tax, although they're both quite low. And you're right, we got the tax, truth in taxation laws that make it a little bit more transparent. But how does Utah even rank with having both?
Well, so Utah ranks, you're right, in having an income tax. It's not in the top 10 states in that category, at least, but at least the legislature got it below 5% on business and personal this year. It was a slight reduction, but I think a symbolically important one that I was out in Salt Lake and was speaking with them about this year. I think you all dodged a bullet when it comes to some of the discussions over potential tax reform and what that might have meant for new types of taxes. Hopefully there'll be a little bit more discussion about that. And I think there's ways to get the rates down. I think that'll be an important discussion to have going forward, but it probably needs a little bit more time. And you look at property taxes, and that's one of those areas. Once again, Utah does not rank in the top 10 in that subcategory. But, you know, truth in taxation, I think, has kept you in the game where other states have really allowed local governments to get out of control. So some good news and bad news in both of those areas. I would love to see another state become a no-income tax state. Utah would be a phenomenal 10th no-income tax state. So I'm a huge fan of that idea.
Amen. We got to work on it. But, Jonathan, one of the reasons that Utah does so well, even though it has both, is because they control the spending side of the equation. Now, I'm not saying that they can't reduce expenditures. Every state can. Big time. But there are states that are more fiscally responsible than others. And Utah, at least comparatively speaking, is relatively conservative and spends less. I think that's the only reason they haven't been forced to drive the taxes straight to the wallet.
That's right. Exactly. And of course, it's not because people aren't clamoring for higher spending either. I think the legislature's done a phenomenal job overall over the last decade with good people in place to keep spending at a prudent level when others are clamoring for tax increases. Of course, they had to navigate the tricky Medicaid expansion or Obamacare that were passed by voters and some other things that made it a little bit more complicated. But overall, Utah's record has been stellar when it comes to keeping government prudent. And, you know, the pension reform that my good friend Dan Lindquist and John Dougal put together a decade ago nearly, I think has been something that's kept Utah ahead of the curve, where Illinois and some of these states are really getting, really barreling towards what I may say insolvency, perhaps. Utah has helped cap those liabilities and move towards more of the defined contribution 401k style that the private sector had gone to decades ago. So Utah's been number one in economic outlook overall in rich states, poor states for all 12 editions of this publication. And I think a lot of that just goes to the testament of the prudence of keeping spending under control, the pension reform, truth in taxation, and then, of course, chipping down income tax rates when you can.
Which states would you say are the best overall, the richest states, for a bunch of reasons? One, low taxation on the citizenry, but yet fiscally responsible, spending less. Which state is poised to really economically rock and roll?
Well, you know, outside of Utah, Idaho, your neighbors in the region have been doing a phenomenal job of recent years, and they've seen the big in-migration and job creation boom that's followed their generally very prudent policies in recent years. North Dakota, Nevada, another state in the region that's done well as a no-income tax state, by the way, as you know. And then you have some states out east. I'm a big fan of what Tennessee and Florida, both no income tax states, have done. It was just in Tallahassee. And I think it's awfully telling to the secret of Florida's success is they're roughly the same size as New York State. Florida's been growing incredibly while New York's been hemorrhaging people. But guess what? You look at them roughly the same population size. Florida spends about half as much as New York does in its overall budget, about half. And it's providing core government services like education and healthcare and the things that government is providing just as well, if not better, than the state of New York when you look at outcomes in many cases. And so I think that is the overall secret to success, is matching up prudence in government spending and then keeping taxes low.
Your colleague, who was it, Stephen Moore, might be tapped to be on the Fed board. That would be huge. All the liberals are going ballistic over this. They don't debate him on the reality of the discussion. All they do is attack him. This is an opportunity that's huge too, right?
Oh, it's a massive opportunity. Having Steve on the Fed with a new line of thinking, this is really kind of a inside the Beltway club, if you will, that has unfortunately become so insular in his thinking. I think President Trump did exactly the right thing by nominating an outsider like Steve Moore, who's got so much real-world experience when it comes to the states and the economy overall, that he's going to bring fresh thinking. And I think that is, quite frankly, it's threatening to a lot of the existing members of the Fed club, if you will. And I think that's why you're seeing so much pushback from kind of the inside the Beltway set. And, of course, the liberal media hates Steve anyways because of his free market conservative views. But I think it's exactly what's needed at this point for our economy nationally.
Well, they attack him and try to just take personal pot shots. They don't debate the real discussion, so they'll lose anyway.
Well, that's exactly what the issue is. Is generally when people start with these personal attacks or attacks on organizations, is because they can't debate the facts and they don't want to debate the economics. And so, if they've given up on those kind of real intellectual arguments, what you find is the mudslinging starts pretty quickly. And you know, some people hate ALEC and hate conservative groups across the board because they're tired of debating real issues, and they just would rather slander people and organizations.
Hey, my next guest after you is Lowell Nelson with Campaign for Liberty. He jumped on a little bit early. Do you have a question for Jonathan, Lowell?
Well, I'm happy to have you on the show, Jonathan, and to hear the good work that you're doing. No specific question. I'm glad you're talking about the Fed, because I believe that is the root of all evil. It's the thing that allows our central government to grow beyond its constitutional scope and reach. And if we could tackle that, boy, then we'd really be making a difference. But I appreciate your good work. I don't have a specific question for you. I was going to ask about the Fed. You've done that a little bit. What do you, maybe a question? What do you believe the next step is on getting a handle on the Fed?
Well, that's a great question, and it's obviously another. Really a figment of the progressive imagination of 100 years ago that we ended up with, of course, the Fed and my least favorite amendment to the United States Constitution, the 16th Amendment, which allowed for the income tax, which, of course, beforehand was unconstitutional. A lot of people are not taught that in school these days. It's awfully important to remember those two things that really set us up for a lot of problems policy-wise. But initially, I think what is getting so much pushback right now is the idea that Steve or Herman Cain or any of these outsiders that are being talked about by President Trump to help break up the monopoly of thinking, if you will, of the Fed current board, is that they don't want to kind of have some of these bigger conversations about kind of digging under the cover to see, what is exactly going on with the Fed. How can we make sure that we're auditing and looking at best practices? And, let's really see how we can unravel a lot of this problem that was created during the Obama bailouts and the recovery from the recession and make sure that taxpayers and the economy get a fair shake. So I think that's why you're seeing so much vitriol, of course, people against Steve and Herman Cain.
Is there anything, I know you've been at this 12 years in these reports, incredible annual update reports released on tax day. We're talking about rich states, poor states. ALEC, ALEC.org is the website to check out to learn more and to get involved and et cetera. But Jonathan, as you've done this for 12 years, is there anything this year and the last couple of recent years that has kind of shocked you that you've went, this is better than we thought. This is surprising because we don't hear about it in the mainstream press. Anything you've discovered?
Well, a couple of things is, first, the effect of federal tax reform on the state and the limitation of the state and local tax deduction, or the SALT deduction, which was a subsidy to high tax and high spend states. Ronald Reagan wanted to get rid of it in 1986. He failed, unfortunately, as that part of tax reform. President Trump and the Congress was more successful, and they capped it at $10,000, which started to do away with this horrible subsidy to California, New York, and high tax and high spending states. And we're already starting to see in places like New Jersey, where Democrat leaders are saying, well, we can't raise taxes because now we've got to pay for it all. So that's exactly the political economy effects that we hope to see through getting rid of this subsidy for high taxes and high spending. That is a huge deal, and I think it's going to pay dividends for those of us who believe in the freedom agenda across the states for many, many years ahead.
Now what we got to do is we got to crank on the spending side of the equation and get these suckers to spend less, and then we're really getting somewhere, sir.
That's right. I mean, it's got to start with spending, and both parties have had a problem at controlling spending in Washington, D.C., let alone in some state capitals. States have generally done a better job than Washington because, A, they have to balance budgets. B, they don't have printing presses. Those are great attributes of budgeting at the state level that really forces people to live within their means.
Hey, Jonathan, we're flat out of time. How do people get the report, sir?
ALEC.org and richstatespoorstates.org.
Richstatespoorstates.org and ALEC.org. Thank you, sir. Great work. Come back soon.
All right. Take care.
Ladies and gentlemen, Jonathan Williams, Chief Economist and Vice President for ALEC, author of the annual report, Rich States, Poor States. Back in a flash with Lowell Nelson.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
After several deaths in the South from severe storms and tornadoes over the weekend, the National Weather Service says severe storms are this morning targeting the New York City tri-state area. The strong storms could bring damaging winds and heavy rains. South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg is kicking off his 2020 campaign. The Democrat mayor made the announcement yesterday in front of a large crowd in South Bend.
The question of our time is whether families and workers will be defeated by the changes beneath us, or whether we will master them and make them work toward a better everyday life for us all.
His announcement makes about 20 Democrats now running for the White House. Today is tax day. If you haven't started or aren't finished, there's hope. If you're in a crunch, you can still file for an extension, though you're still supposed to pay what you owe to avoid a penalty. And this is USA Radio News.
This Easter, Breakthrough, starring Chrissy Metz.
Boys, get off the ice!
He's been underwater for 15 minutes.
The odds were against her son.
He's had no pulse for over an hour.
Until his mother's prayer.
Please send her Holy Spirit to save my son.
Proved the impossible.
We've got a pulse!
On April 17th.
I don't believe John will survive the night.
Discover the incredible true story.
You don't know my son.
Of an extraordinary miracle.
He is a fighter.
Breakthrough. Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested. For tickets, go to breakthroughmovie.com.
Pros know doing it right means getting more bang for your buck, because putting more toward your bottom line is good for business. Lowe's does it right with savings on the brands you trust. Come in now during our Stock the Shop event and save up to 25% off select tools and accessories from DeWalt, Irwin, Bostitch, and more. Like $40 off a Bostitch 16-gauge finished nail gun now for just $139. For your next job and the next, do it right for less. Start with Lowe's. Offer valid through 4/21. See store for details. U.S. only.
A historic case of redemption in sports, as Tiger Woods is the winner of the 2019 Masters at Augusta National in Georgia. He says it was one of his best performances ever.
If you look at it, my first 14 wins in majors were always, I had the lead in every one of them, or tied for the lead. To have the opportunity to come back like this, it is probably one of the biggest wins I've ever had, for sure.
White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders says President Trump never offered a pardon to a U.S. official if he would agree to close the border with Mexico. On Fox News Sunday, Sanders dismissed a report by the New York Times that the president last week asked Customs and Border Protection Commissioner Kevin McAleenan to break the law and shut down the border. Shazam remains the number one movie in the U.S. and Canada over the weekend. The comedy Little came in at number two. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
All right, it's important to understand, economically speaking, things aren't perfect, but things are way better than we're being told. Alec and others documenting this reality. Go check out alec.org or richstatepoorstates.org to learn more. And any other comments on that, Lowell, before we rock and roll?
My own question about that is, you know, what can a state do? Because a state is a sovereign entity, and we simply don't act like sovereign as states anymore, but we need to have the backbone to do so. And so if we would be a sovereign state, what could a sovereign state do to curtail the spending habit, the profligate spending patterns of the general government, right? I mean, that's one of my big questions, and I'm chewing on that, and we have some ideas to do that. But, you know, had I had a little bit more time to think about framing the question, then perhaps I could have asked Jonathan. Maybe I'll ask him that offline sometime. But, Sam, that's one of my big questions, is because we need to be able to curtail and curb the spending pattern, spending habits of the general government, and getting states to become sovereign enough, it would be a big, big, big step. But then we also need to actually take action to force the general government to curb their spending. And that's a question I don't really have a good answer to yet.
You know, one of the great things the states can do, as I mentioned right at the end of the interview with Jonathan, the states can spend less, sir. Because if they spend less, their demand and need, and they're, you know, politicians feel like they're in a box. They're spending so much, they go, oh my gosh, we're up against the wall. How do we get the revenue for this thing? If they spend less, they're not up against that wall, you know, so to speak, then that quest, that push, that opposing the citizenry won't be there, sir.
Yes, that's right. And I think the citizenry, we ourselves need to change our attitudes as well, because the current attitude, you know, speaking of the American people collectively, is to go ahead and to go into debt. And it's okay to go into debt. Now, there was a time when that attitude was not prevalent among the population, where going into debt was thought of as being morally unjustifiable, where, in other words, you only went into debt for maybe one or two things. One was maybe your education, one was a home, but you never went into debt for consumer goods, certainly not. And, you know, that attitude has dissipated over the decades, and unfortunately, we find ourselves with an attitude that says, you know, go into debt. It's okay to go into debt for consumer goods, and I find that to be also a problem, because when we have that attitude, then we're not going to be able to take the attitude that the state should not go into debt either.
Kurt, you want to jump in? Any final part of this? All right. We'll try to get Kurt back.
Say that again.
It was unplanned.
Sorry.
All right. Kurt, go ahead, sir.
Well, I didn't hear the question, but I was just putting headphones over.
Let's just go ahead and move to unplanned the movie.
Very good.
Lol?
Well, the movie Unplanned, we've hit this hard the last 2 weeks, and for a third week in a row, Unplanned, the movie, is doing very well, grossing almost $2 million this past weekend. So if you're connecting the dots, the opening weekend, they did $6.8 million, or maybe 6.2, anyway, a little bit over $6 million. The second weekend, they did 3.2, and then this last couple of days, they did an estimated $2 million, 1.8. And now the money is not the important thing, but the popularity with which the movie is being received is. That's the important thing. And so they've now grossed over $10 million for a movie that cost $6 million to make. And I find that very encouraging. There are people all over this country, Sam, who are watching this movie and whose lives, whose hearts, whose minds are being changed by this movie. And the great thing about this weekend was that it's now being it's well understood and being reported by CBN News, in fact, that it's changing lives for abortion workers. There are nearly 100 abortion clinic workers, Sam, who this past week have sought to leave their job. They've sought to change the course of their lives by getting out of the abortion clinic industry, and I find that very, very encouraging. The director of the PureFlix movie, Chuck Konzelman, he reported in his testimony to the Senate Judiciary Committee last week, he said 94 clinic workers have approached the former Planned Parenthood executive, meaning him. They've talked to him about Abby Johnson's nonprofit organization, and there, which is called And Then There Were None, right? That's the name of her nonprofit, And Then There Were None. And so he reported to Congress that 94 abortion clinicians have approached that nonprofit to get out of the industry because they saw this movie, Sam.
It is tremendous, the chance to testify before Congress. It is tremendous that these people are waking up despite the media blackout, Kurt.
You know, one thing to throw in here, Lowell, is, I mean, when do you see, at least that I can remember in my lifetime, two pro-life films? You got the Gosnell movie that's right now, in the last few days, being screened at the White House. And then you've got, you know, this movie, Unplanned, at the same time, hitting the theaters, if you will, or at least front rooms of the American people. I mean, it's kind of amazing.
is delightful. And that, with the blackout in the media, with the hostility, I mean, some of these movies, they even in the planning and filming of these movies were literally kicked out of places. And once they found out what they were doing, prevented from using certain things, despite tremendous opposition. Kurt's point spot on, Lowell.
He's exactly right. And also, I have to note here that Ashley Bratcher, the actor who portrays Abby Johnson in the movie, Ashley seems to be, you know, taking this role to heart. In other words, she gets tweets every day. She said she got a tweet last Thursday about, you know, I can read the tweet here. She got this this text from somebody saying, just wanted you, you know, she's talking to the actress, right? This person is talking, tweeting to the actress. She says this, she says, just want you to know that the abortion-minded client I shared your testimony with says she is now looking forward to being a mother, and six exclamation points. And so Ashley then texted back and said, how amazing, with six exclamation points. Would you please, please, please let me know if there's any way that I can help her or support her? Please send her my love and let her know that I am personally so proud of her.
Incredible information. The truth shall set us free. Ladies and gentlemen, I know we got a long road to hoe on this, but we are making tremendous progress. That's for sure. Now, we need to talk about confessions of a former abortion clinic owner. This is just riveting. Lol.
It is, Sam. I don't know how I stumbled onto this, but posted. Now, this is a story that came out in 2014, nearly 5 years ago. This story is posted at IllinoisFamily.org, and it's the confessions of an abortion clinic worker or an owner. This owner named Carol Everett spoke to the March for Life, group in 2014 in Ottawa, Canada. It turns out that Everett ran a chain of four abortion clinics in Texas from 1977 to 1983, where an estimated 35,000 unborn children were aborted before Carol's dramatic conversion and departure from the industry.
By the way, that's my whole city, a little bit more than my whole city, ladies and gentlemen, of men, women, and children. So it's just, oh, heartbreaking. Nevertheless, good news.
Carol then had an experience similar to what Abby Johnson had, whose character is portrayed in the movie Unplanned. So I'm not saying these two are linked. I'm just saying that Carol Everett's story is similar to Abby Johnson's story. So this Carol Everett...
They're linked only in the reality that people are learning the truth and their hearts are changing their lives and their actions from pro-death to pro-life.
Carol says, we had a goal of 3 to 5 abortions from every girl between the ages of 13 to 18 in the cities right there in Texas. Now, everybody in the clinic worked on a straight commission basis, she said, inside the abortion industry. So to reach her goal, she had to create a market for abortion. And that meant convincing young people from the earliest age possible to see sexuality in an entirely different way than previous generations. Now, before I go on with this story, Sam, see, I thought that the abortion clinic industry had a moral vacuum and that they were trying to corrupt the morals. I thought sex education was to corrupt the morals of our young people, and it does, but I did not realize that there was a profit motive behind sex education.
In other words, there was a step-by-step, let's lead you into sacrificing your children on the altar of filthy lucre and the pro-death agenda. We'll tell you about it in seconds. Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org.
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win, they lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm by a friend of Medjugorje. The strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm. Available on Amazon.com or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
I'd advise Mr. Trump to stop whining and go try to make his case to get votes.
The press has created a rigged system. They even want to try and rig the election.
Well, I tell you what, it helps in Ohio that we got Democrats in charge of the machines.
And poisoned the mind of so many of our voters.
At the polling booths, where so many cities are corrupt and voter fraud is all too common. And then they say, oh, there's no voter fraud in our country.
I come from Chicago. So I want to be honest. It's not as if it's just Republicans who have monkeyed around with elections in the past. Sometimes Democrats have too. You know, whenever people are in power, they have this tendency to try to, you know, tilt things in their direction.
There's no vote.
You start whining before the game's even over. Whenever things are going badly for you and you lose, you start blaming somebody else. And you don't have what it takes to be in this job.
All right, confessions, of an abortion clinic owner. This story is about 5 years old, but it's so relevant to today, it's shocking. They literally use sex education to feed the pro-death mill. Lol?
Right. They create a demand for abortions, and they start with sex education, and they start very early in kindergarten. This is Carol Everett again talking about what they did to create a demand in the abortion industry. They say in kindergarten, you put the children in a circle and you go around the room and you ask them all the same questions. What do your parents call your private part? That's very, that's a private question, right? Well, you know, and I know that every family in the room has a different name for the private part. So by the time you reach the third or fourth child, it is clear to those children that parents simply do not know what they have. But we did. We said, boys, this is what you have, and girls, this is what you have, and don't be ashamed of your private part. Clearly implying by that question, or by that statement, Sam, that your parents must be ashamed of your private parts because they don't talk about it, they have different names for it, they don't know what's going on, and so Everett explains then.
Look
that
how embarrassed your parents are when they talk about it. It's because they're ignorant.
Yep. And this sex education at the earliest stages is aimed at eroding in the children what she calls the natural modesty. Natural modesty. And then everything is calculated to separate the children from their values and from their parents. Right? That's what sex education is designed to do. By third grade, children were shown explicit how-to diagrams of sexual intercourse. By fourth grade, children are encouraged to masturbate, either alone or in groups of the same sex. By the fifth and sixth grade, Everett herself supplied the missing link between sex ed and abortion. She said this, "My goal, to get them sexually active on low-dose birth control pills that we knew they would get pregnant on. How do you do that? You give them a low-dose birth control pill that, in order to provide any level of protection, has to be taken accurately at the same time every single day. And you know and I know there's not a teenage boy or girl in the world who does everything the same time every day." Everett then said a girl on the pill who thought she was safe, quote-unquote, typically had sex more frequently than those not on the pill. The pill doesn't work, and then we could accomplish our goal of 3 to 5 abortions between the ages of 13 and 15, she said. Everett said that if sex education was done correctly, then when the girl becomes pregnant, she believes she has only one real choice. She's going to call our clinic because she's been told we're pro-choice. In order to sell as many abortions as possible, Everett trained her employees to lead the distraught callers towards abortion as the only possible solution.
So they're pro-choice as long as you make their choice.
Yeah. When our telephone rang, we were ready, you see. We had trained the people to answer our telephones as telemarketers. We sold over the telephone. We couldn't call them telemarketers. That's far too harsh. We called them telephone counselors. We trained them with a script designed to overcome every single objection. A That's what cells is, right? Overcoming the objection and filling the order. In this case, the abortion, she said. The former abortion provider said she knew the sex ed strategy was more than a success when a young woman visited one of her clinics for her ninth abortion. Everett went on to describe what she called the miraculous journey of leaving the abortion industry and giving her life to God. In 1995, she founded the Heidi Group, a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping women experiencing a crisis pregnancy, named after one of Everett's own children, whom she aborted in 1973. Sam, this story is so similar to what Abby Johnson went through. It's incredible.
Yes, except that they played different roles and they saw it from a different perspective slightly, but the principles are the same and the witnesses are becoming legioned. In other words, there's so many witnesses telling these tales. You know what? You can't debate the facts anymore. Now you got to deal with the grisly reality of the pro-death disguised as pro-choice agenda front and center with Gosnell the movie, Unplanned the movie, with Abby Johnson telling her story and coming to Christ, and then confessions of a former abortion clinic owner doubling down and matching her story. They don't even know each other. Well, they didn't until they both became pro-life. But even bishops in Massachusetts, one of the most liberal states, Catholic bishops are making a difference, Kurt.
Well, that's exactly right, Sam. And, you know, the headline from Breitbart basically is saying those exact words, the Catholic bishops condemning Roe abortion bills, egregious attack on human life. And this is they've released a statement condemning these proposed bills. The cardinal there, Sean O'Malley, joined with the bishops of Springfield, Worcester, and Fall River in denouncing the two bills as an egregious attack on human life. They tell you which ones they are, but they would these measures would specifically allow abortions during the 9 months of pregnancy for virtually any reasons, eliminate any requirement that abortions be performed in a hospital, eliminate the requirement that provides medical care to a child who survives an abortion attempt, eliminate the requirement that a minor under the age of 18 have the consent of a parent, guardian, or the courts. And number five, provides state funding for women who cannot afford the procedure. Man, they're Massachusetts, like a number of other states. The other ones they've joined, New York, Virginia, Illinois, Vermont, and Rhode Island, in killing babies.
Well, the truth is coming out, and we're making a difference, and good people are working hard for pro-life, and I commend them and thank them for their efforts. We can't forget when we talk about pro-life, we cannot forget the war-like people we have become, and we got to turn our backs on that. But good news, there is some efforts in that regard to having more peace and less war mentality. SJR7, Lowell.
Thank you, Sam. The U.S. House voted just 10 days ago on April 4th. They voted 247-175, so pretty commanding, compelling majority. They voted to remove U.S. armed forces from hostilities in Yemen. So Ben McAdams of Utah was the only Utah rep who voted correctly on this measure. Bishop Curtis and Stewart, all three of them, voted against the resolution to end U.S. support of the war on Yemen. The Senate approved this resolution last month on March 13th by a vote of 54-46. Both Rand Paul and Mike Lee of Utah voted in favor of the resolution. Mitt Romney opposed the measure, and now we don't know what Trump will do with his resolution, but we pray that he will not veto it, but will get the U.S. out of this horrific support for this horrific war, Saudi-led war on Yemen. We don't need any more blood on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. Let's get out of that war.
Well, we have opportunities like we've never had before. It's time for us as Americans, or that we, the American people, to seize the day, sir.
That's absolutely right, Sam. You and I, you see, this is one of the big lies, one of the big myths that we're taught in schools around the country, in the United States, is that we're not responsible for what our government does. That's a myth. You and I are responsible for what our government does. And when our government goes off on these wars and starts killing children and putting embargoes and so forth on these nation states in hopes of coercing their population to take down their own government, but we end up killing millions of people in doing so, that blood is on our hands. And we need to do everything we can do, folks, to stop the killing and stop the warshed or the bloodshed that's caused by these numerous wars going on. What did we learn last week, Sam? 37 out of the last 45 wars we are involved in, we have blood on our hands in 37 of the most recent conflicts. And that's simply got to stop.
Sam. We're praying for a change, and we're doing our best to get involved and get our hands dirty and advocate for that change at every turn, doing the best we can in the media to do so. But you know what, ladies and gentlemen, the truth is coming out on so many fronts, so many fronts. But the people who have led the charge as whistleblowers are getting attacked like no other. Julian Assange is one great example. Arrested, what? To be brought back to the USA? Yeah. Great concern. Grave threats to press freedom. Lol.
As Ron Paul has often said, Sam, truth is treason in an empire of lies. And whenever the truth comes out, then the general government, whose lies and corruption are being exposed, they want to take out the truth teller. They want to shut down the whistleblower. And in this case, they've waited 7 years for this opportunity, and then they pounced on Julian Assange when Ecuador made the deal, cut a deal, basically, folks. There's no other way to explain it. Basically, the Vice President Trump, Mike Pence, and the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, they've swung a deal with the new leader in Ecuador, right? I mean, the former president, Rafael Correa, says, a direct condition of Moreno's getting a $4.2 billion IMF loan was Assange's head on a silver platter. There's a lot more, this is a lot more plausible, folks, than establishment media reports that Assange was ejected for transgressing the Ecuadorian fastidious hygiene standard. Yeah, give me a break. Basically, in order to get that money, that $4.2 billion loan from the IMF, Ecuador needed to hand over Assange, and so they let that happen just two or three or four days ago. Now, let's remind ourselves, Sam, what WikiLeaks has revealed. Basically, they put out the collateral murder video that was brought to them by Bradley Manning in 2010, showing U.S. troops indiscriminately slaughtering civilians in Baghdad from a helicopter and from on the ground. In 2011... the Gitmo files were released showing the torture and the mistreatment of prisoners at Guantanamo Bay, some of which resulted in death. In 2016, the Operation Sophia was disclosed showing that the NSA is and has been and had been spying on world leaders and citizens of the United States. In 2016, the DNC email scandal broke showing a pro-Clinton media bias and a scheme to push Sanders out of the race to be the nominee for the Democratic Party. Those are just four, Sam, four of the revelations from WikiLeaks. And
what they're going to do is they're going to hold Julian responsible. The question is, will Donald defend Julian? He defended him on the campaign trail. Now we need a pardon yesterday, lol.
That's exactly right. And we don't know really what's going to happen. Maybe he helped to orchestrate this thing to get Julian Assange out of the embassy because he was being mistreated there and not able to visit with friends or foreigners anymore, basically in solitary confinement. So maybe we get him out, throw him in prison so Trump can pardon him. That would be a wonderful thing.
Our prayers are with Julian, and our prayers are that Donald gets it and that the deep state doesn't swamp them both, ladies and gentlemen. But I'm telling you right now, press or freedom of the press is at stake. If they win and shut down Julian and force him to have abuses for his whistleblowing, who will be next? Beware, my fellow Americans. Stand for the truth shall set you free. Lowell, thank you so much, sir. Phenomenal job.
You're welcome, gentlemen.
There he goes, ladies and gentlemen. Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org, doing a phenomenal job. Wow, Jonathan doing a great job on the rich states, poor states tax day report. Just think about that, man. The folks from ALEC decide to come on Liberty Roundtable Live on tax day as they do a media blitz highlighting reality of which states to move to because there's lower taxes. This nation shall endure.